Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. My name is Emma Burnell, and I'm a political journalist, and I'm joined, as always, by Professor Stephen Fielding. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Emma. Hello, listener.
So we thought we'd do an extra episode just because the whole of political Twitter has been aflame last night and this morning, and hopefully this will be out later today, talking about the latest offering from James Graham, which was a TV movie called Brexit, The Uncivil War, all about the referendum of 2016. It starred Benedict Cumberbatch as Dominic Cummings and told the story of how the Leave campaign won, or at least quite a lot of the story of how the Leave campaign won. So, Steve, what did you think?
Well, Emma, as we're talking, it's the morning after the film was broadcast on Channel 4, and unfortunately, I had a prior arrangement in a pub in Manchester watching Liverpool lose to Wolverhampton Wanderers in the FA Cup third round. So I've literally, and this is the morning of the day after, as I said, the night after, and I've just literally watched it, finished watching it about half an hour ago. And I, you know, even though it was in the very inauspicious circumstances of a slight hangover, 7 o'clock in the morning start to watch it, I thought it was really good. I mean, I thought it was very good on a number of levels. I thought it was very, as a drama, I thought it was excellent. I thought as a way of explaining to people who won't necessarily know some of the intricacies and some of the background for the referendum and in particular the Leave campaign, I thought it was really good. So kind of politically and dramatically, I thought it had a number of very good things going for it. And I should declare a kind of interest in that I'm a fan of James Graham, the writer's work in general, and I completely appreciate what he's been trying to do across his career in terms of dramas about politics, that he takes politics seriously. He's from a certain perspective. It's undeniable. It just so happens to be slightly my perspective, from a kind of centre left perspective. But nonetheless, he does very good jobs at trying to understand different points of view and to communicate that to people who wouldn't necessarily, tour Twitter on a minute by minute basis and know the ins and the outs of all kinds of backroom stuff. So I'm kind of slightly biased. There are obviously questions to be asked of how the drama was presented, how it was framed, about, you know, the role of Cummings, Dominic Cummings, and all the rest of it. But coming at it, you know, just off the bat, I thought this was really good, a very difficult job to talk about, to dramatise something so recent that is still ongoing, in many of the implications that are playing out. And I thought it was just a really good job. What did you think, Emma?
I think I had a slightly more complex reaction to it. I love James Graham's writing in general. Only one of his plays I didn't particularly like, and that was not a political one. It was the one about the coughing major. And I think that was because I felt I was being directed during that play to take a different point of view than I actually hold, rather than being given the chance to make up my own mind. In this, I mean, I have problems that are separate from the drama, like the timing and the framing. So I just, the idea that we know the full story of what Vote Leave did yet, I think is highly questionable. And I know that Carol Cadwallader, who's done a lot of the investigation into sort of various nefarious payments, Russian intervention, that sort of thing, made that point quite vociferously to James Graham. So I just feel like setting the narrative now, and there is no way that this doesn't help to, you know, set that narrative, is a little disingenuous, maybe that's the wrong word, because I don't suppose in I don't have any universe in which I think that James Graham would act disingenuously. I just believe that it's not necessarily the right thing to do in terms of saying, laying it out in that popular fiction way that does help us all to think about these things. As you said, if you don't know the ins and outs, this is a good way, a good guide to it. But I'm not sure all the ins and outs were there. I felt the casting of Benedict Cumberbatch, while, again, he did a very good job, brings certain baggage to it. So you've got this figure who's supposed to be this sort of kind of slightly quirky, weird, untouchable genius, godlike guy. And you're like, oh, yeah, I wonder why they cast the guy who plays Sherlock Holmes in that role. And it again, that brings with it this sort of, oh, he must be much cleverer than us. He's Sherlock Holmes, subconsciousness to it. And that, again, slightly bothered me. Overall, I thought the drama did well at addressing some of the key flaws in the Vote Leave side, some of the key tensions. If you've read Tim Shipman's book, there's a lot more to those tensions, but there's only so much you can get into a TV film. I also felt like it was a little too kind to the Remain side, where they suddenly work out about three quarters of the way through that the Leave campaign has been going on for 20 years and they've done absolutely nothing to counter it. And all they've done is stop blue on blue infighting. It was an enjoyable drama. If it had been made in 5 years' time, I would have probably had less of a problem with it. But I mean, given the violence we've literally seen on our streets yesterday, I'm not sure if this is the time for any drama that's going to try and make me feel sympathetic to Dominic Cummings, which it 100% failed to do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yes. I mean, there is a big question mark about the focus on Dominic. God, I nearly said something else there. Dominic Cummings. And you're absolutely right. Actually, having Benedict Cumberbatch playing him brings various, you know, unintentional baggage or intentional baggage, depending. And certainly in the first half, because it goes on for 2 hours, although it didn't actually feel like it, unlike some films, naming their names like Peterloo, that feel like they're going on for longer and longer. Actually, this didn't feel like it went on for 2 hours at all. But about the first half, it's all about him. And I was beginning to, I was beginning to think, blimey, you know, this is all a bit David and Goliath. I mean, because they're setting it up as the anti-establishment person, this brilliant guy, and you juxtapose him with these pompous, dickish politicians, you know, so he's kind of the genius in his own terms. And you don't really get much of a counter to all of that. You know, he's got these brilliant insights, he's quirky as this, is that. But in the second half, you do get increasingly, you know, questions about what it is that he's doing and what the consequences of what it is that he's doing. And so at the very end, when there's this kind of an investigation that he's kind of talking to, set 4 years in the future. And basically, he doesn't know, you know, he's this kind of geeky anarchist. He wants to change everything. He's a disruptor. He's a brilliant. All these things are going to happen. We need to adapt and embrace change rather than try to stop change like the establishment is trying to do. That's his kind of argument. It's clear, or at least the drama suggests strongly, that he really hasn't got a clue what he's done. You know, what positively, you know, what, okay, you've done this, you've managed to get Britons to vote to leave in this particular way, which can be very damaging to the nation. That's a suggestion that's made. But what have you done in a positive way? He doesn't know. He's still blaming the politicians for being rubbish. And he's kind of saying, I was waiting for somebody to come along and to take advantage, you know, to sort of take control of this new situation. And it's not him. And there's nobody. And I think actually that is really, really damning of him. And up to that point, you know, they've Craig, I always want to say Craig David, but Craig Oliver.
Quite different people.
I understand that to be the case. The Craig Oliver figure, who is the counterpart in terms of the two campaigns, but he doesn't get equal time. But increasingly in the second half, we see more of him. And he's kind of, you know, Rory Kinnear plays him, you know, because Rory Kinnear with a toupee on looks very much like David Cameron. He can't help that. Kind of smooth establishment, you know, quiet voiced, nice guy, but is a member of the establishment. I mean, he's the one that articulates the various concerns about what's been going on, you know, the nature of the campaign. He's the one that says, you know, ask questions of coming, because they have this made up meeting towards the end after the assassination of Joe Cox, which is clearly signalled as a consequence of the kind of thing that Cummings is doing. It's never said directly. Nobody ever says it directly. But it's, I mean, this member of the audience, maybe slightly prejudiced, thought that that's what James Graham was kind of intimating, that, you know, at some level there is a responsibility, you know, the responsibility for her murder lies at Cummings's door, you know, to some extent, you know, maybe next door, maybe not directly on his doorstep, but it's close to him. So I thought there was some kind of balance, but whether ultimately it was kind of, if you're looking for like a pure balance, I think, yeah, Cummings comes out of this better than I suspect a lot of people would have wanted him to come out of it, partly because he is this David versus a Goliath in many ways. But then, and also because he's played by Benedict Cumberbatch. But I think there are lots of questions that are asked. But yeah, I think it would not be. I think many members of the audience might come away thinking, Dominic Cummings, he was an interesting figure, and what a bunch of wankers, self-satisfied wankers, the people who were in charge of Remain were, really. But that's, you know. But I think it was much more subtle than that. But whether members of the audience all took that, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think if you were going to critique the Remain campaign, that's probably where you'd land. You know, it was very establishment and, you know, made so many mistakes. I also felt they kind of made the Farage and Aaron Banks characters these sort of cartoony buffoons.
Yeah.
And actually, that depiction worries me, because that's not who they are. They're fascists dressed up as buffoons. And, you know, when you make them laughable, you diminish the impact they're really having, and the degradation that they've wrought on our political conversation.
Mm. Well, again, sorry, I forget the name of the actor who played Aaron Banks, but he normally plays fascists and thugs, basically. I mean, he was in Coronation Street years ago playing some kind, I think he was, you know, a drugs dealer. He doesn't play nice people. And there were certain little bits that revealed that he's, you know, Aaron Banks is not a nice person. You know, little things that he did. But you're right, he did. Yeah, buffoons, you're absolutely right, buffoonish.
Yeah, I mean, there were nods towards a lot of the stuff that I think is the more interesting story. You had Mercer turning up and sort of being weird and dark in the shadows, like some Bond villain or something. And eventually, if that turns out to be, you know, the truth and the Carole Cadwalladr story becomes our accepted narrative of what happened during the Brexit referendum, that's a lot more interesting to me than some pompous prat who writes 3,000-word blogs about his own brilliance and having his story made big in this way. I worry about telling this story now when we don't know this story yet.
Yeah, although, you know, I mean, as a dramatisation of reality, I mean, this, like, you can say, is it, or even the writing of history, if you tried to tell it, like, on the basis of the facts only, is there a right time for ever writing anything about what's happened? You know, you might say, well, the further you go away from an event, the more perspective you get, the more information you get. And clearly there is more information to be had about the nature of, you know, the two Leave campaigns. And so you'll never, but will you ever really ever know enough? So I haven't got a problem with this coming out at the point at which it comes out. I mean, it ends kind of saying, you know, this, you know, more the stories continue.
Yeah,
well,
that felt like a bit
something.
Of a cop out to me.
Well, yes, because we don't really know enough definitively about what really happened. I mean, we know about what Carol Cadwalader has found out, and you know, you assume it's all true, but that hasn't really played out yet. But there are two sides. But think the thing is to sort of and that might make a really good conspiracy drama about. I mean, there's a lot of people on the Remain side who do think that basically it was a referendum that was corrupt and it was bought and it was subject to all this kind of data, illegal data mining and all that kind of stuff. And that's one, and that's clearly an aspect of the story. And it was winked at, but not very strongly within this drama. Because you're right, it's mostly about Cummings and his agency. But in terms of the drama, it told one, the other side. If I mean, there's probably more than just two sides. Another side to it, which was, it was how Cummings kind of tapped into what. That 3 million or so people who, you know, that couple that were depicted in Douglas Carswell's constituency, the people who no political party had knocked on their door since the '80s, that nobody had knocked on their door of any consequence. I mean, people who were just like the embodiment of Left Behind, and that he'd tapped into their own ignorance about themselves and their situation. I mean, and that's not being patronizing, because they were ignorant. I mean, you know, that it was sad. It was, you know, it was really upsetting for the woman who was retelling, you know, why her children had moved away while there was nothing. And, you know, and all it, you know, these were not good lives that they were living, but their explanation as to why their lives were as they were was complete balderdash. But there are a lot of people who think that, and a lot of those did vote, and those were the people that tipped the balance in terms of the campaign. But those were real people, and all that, in a way, all that Cummings did, I mean, it made him into a hero just for coming up with a slogan, you know, take back control. That was turned into this kind of eureka moment, which I think was a bit spurious, because all he was doing was, and I think it's quite clear what in the drama, if you saw it in a certain way, all that Cummings was doing was playing back to people their own ignorance. And actually, in the script itself, he knows what he's doing. It's clear, you know, that he said, we need to appeal to this kind of nostalgia. It's not true, but this is how, if we want to win, this is what we've got to do. He's a cold-hearted exploiter of people's ignorance. And in order to win. And I think the drama makes that clear. Maybe it's overwhelmed because of the way in which Dominic Cumberbatch, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Well, that's the problem.
Personally. yes. Yeah. That maybe that's slightly lost, but it is there.
It is there. I don't know. It is there. I mean, he goes from we will use the data, we will follow the data, to quite emotive stuff. And there's, you can sort of see why that happens, but on the other hand, it's a bit, I mean, the whole I can feel England screaming stuff was just a little weird for me. Somebody, I wish I could remember, I think it was John Elledge on Twitter. Yes, it was John. Said, this is basically just the Master from Doctor Who hearing the sound of drums, isn't it? Which I thought was, yeah, quite an apt comparison.
But was that implying, because I mean, the only person that could hear those sounds were, I mean, there is a suggestion that he is mental. I mean, as soon as I saw the character as it was presented to me, I thought, this guy's got a series of mental illnesses. And the fact that he could hear noise, no, nobody else could hear that noise. I mean, are we meant to think that there really
no,
is that
I
noise?
Don't think we are. Not least because as far as he's concerned, as soon as they win the referendum, the noise stops. And it's like, well, for 48% of it,
yeah,
that's when the noise started, mate. Yeah, we're screaming now, dude.
yes.
I think, there, I mean, it's quite hard to separate my feelings about the campaign from my feelings about the drama, which I'm trying to do journalistically, and you're very good at doing academically. So it was brilliantly done. I think there are some interesting things that actually reflect what happened. So there aren't very many women, which was just like the campaign. You have one token woman on each side who gets a very, very little to do or say. The main time you get women speaking in the drama is the woman you were talking about in the house in Southend. Is it Southend or is it Clacton? I can't remember which of the...
That's because you're a metropolitan elitist and they're all...
They're round the coast from each other in Essex. Really, of all my geographical failures, of which there are many, that one really ain't on me. So you've got the woman in the house in I'm going to say Clacton, and then you've got the other woman who has the big speech about why can't we say anything racist anymore in the focus group. So all women get to do in this is be hysterical and upset and be the emotional side of the campaign.
That's interesting. I'm sure that was subconscious. I wonder if it was subconscious about him, but yeah.
Well, I wonder. I mean, it's certainly true that he would have had no women really to depict. No. Because he wasn't showing, particularly wasn't showing through. I mean, you had a timely walk on part of Gisella Stewart.
With a hand up.
With a hand up. It's like she was. I mean, there were a lot of Doctor Who comparisons. She was Harriet Jones. Mm-hmm. The way that she was depicted was very similar to that. There were no really, big women characters in either campaign. When he showed women, it was showing them as part of the debates. So it was the real people in the real debates. So you had flashes of Ruth Davidson. I think you had Frances O'Grady at one point.
Penny Morden. And Joe Cox.
And Joe was obviously, Joe's story was in there. Obviously, it was the right decision not to have her, because she wasn't. I mean, Jo was a very, very staunch Remainer, but she wasn't a public face of the campaign until after she was gone.
No, although it didn't really make very much of, is that because the guy that killed her obviously shouted all kinds of things, which suggested he had been, at least consuming some of the coming stuff, or at least related stuff.
No, he'd been radicalised by right-wing US websites.
But they didn't mention what he said as he killed her, which was a bit interesting as well. But, you've raised something which actually maybe I certainly missed as a thing, and maybe James Graham missed as a possible way of approaching it, in that it didn't really make that much of this. These were just big, big knobbed men having a go at each other, and women were either victims, shouting from the sidelines, the subjects of the campaigns in some respect, but not really central. He might have made something of that, but it's an interesting possibility.
And what I also thought was interesting, particularly given it was James Graham, who I generally find writes politicians with a lot of nuance and heart and humanity, is that actually most of the actual elected politicians were portrayed in quite cartoonish ways. I mean, okay, Boris Johnson is a living cartoon, so you can't really portray him any other way. I mean, he is very different off camera. I've been in a room with him where it was just me and him, and he had literally no interest in me because I wasn't posh or interesting or Tory or had nothing to say about his career. So you could have maybe depicted the difference between him, and they don't. I've never seen a depiction of Boris where he isn't being bumbly front of camera Boris, even when he's in the back of a room standing there chanting Turkey. So I think that was a missed opportunity.
Although there were a couple of moments. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think maybe it was to make Cummings more sympathetic.
Maybe.
Or at least that was the outcome. There was him, and then all these pompous, as you say, very unusually, caricature silly MPs, politicians that, like you say, Graham normally kind of doesn't go down that route. But there were at least a couple of occasions where with the Boris character, where, you know, when he and Gove are presented with the bus and the 350 million and the NHS symbol and all of that, they both of them go, well, they kind of go, well, you can't really do, and then they just go along with it. But then there's that moment when there's that woman, one of the few women, as you pointed out, that woman in a wheelchair as he's getting on the bus, Boris, that is, and she says, "Oh, you're one of the good guys. I didn't realise." And then she's quoting the figure about all those
70 million Turks.
And then he's kind of actually kind of starts to, well, that is the, you know, well, we that is the population of Turkey, and he's starting to, the lie is starting to unravel because he can't actually say it, you know, to a real person. That's minor stuff. That's minor stuff. Yeah, normally it's, you're right. I mean, it's the usual Boris that appears.
I mean, and I have my own prejudices. So if you want to depict Dan Hannan as a complete idiot and Douglas Carswell as a socially inept moron, I'm not going to complain too heavily, but the other side might. But it did feel like, you know, there is more nuance to these people, presumably. They can't just be the cardboard cutouts they appear in public life. And then, you know, getting a bit more under the skin of that would have been interesting to me. But there seemed to be a very, very sharp definition between the one-dimensional politicians and the genius backroom boys.
Yeah.
Which I felt was unnecessary.
Oh, just sort of another character that Benedict Cumberbatch brings to the role, and that's Alan Turing, isn't it? The backroom boy, yeah, the one that breaks the code. He breaks the code,
of course.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and it is these, you know, clever, socially inept geniuses.
Yes, it is,
and that is a classic archetype in drama. And when you portray that archetype, we then bring certain expectations to that character that I don't know. And certainly this is probably my prejudices speaking, but I'm not sure that Dominic Cummings fully embodies those.
Well, I couldn't possibly say, because I've only ever seen him occasionally on TV when he comes across as a complete cock. But...
Well, and I've read one or two of, or at least attempted to read one or two of his incredibly long blogs, and it's that classic thing of, if I quote enough classics, people won't work out I'm really stupid. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the classic academic route as well, actually, to be perfectly honest. But so yeah, you and I don't know who the real Dominic Cummings is, but and I don't know whether this drama brought that out and whether it was really there to do, but I think by default, and I'm sure he didn't intend it, James Graham is kind of overwhelmed this drama and this account, and perhaps made the Leave campaign, through Cummings at least, more sympathetic,
more noble.
And I don't think that was an intention, but I think just because of the things we've talked about, there's a danger of that. There's lots of subtleties, there's lots of winkings, there's lots of caveats, and the Craig Oliver character actually does say lots of things which I, when he was saying them, I thought, yeah, that's James Graham putting the alternative view of Dominic Cummings. But unfortunately, the Craig Oliver character isn't very well brought out. I mean, he's shown feeding his kids fish fingers while he's talking to the Prime Minister in the sort of domestic setting and whatever, but he's not really fleshed out. He's not of equal weight, and he's carrying the kind of establishment baggage. So just the fact he's saying these things might not be taken as seriously as others. And we do, I mean, and I did wonder, you know, we do see, you know, Cummings coming back from some meeting and flopping on the bed and going to his wife, "Oh, why doesn't anybody like me?" And she, who's heavily pregnant, gives him a snog, "Oh, I like you." And you think, and it's like, well, if she likes him, he can't be that bad. And yet he probably is. I don't know. He may be, you know, lots of people think he is a complete psycho. But I do think it was a good thing to attempt, and I think it largely came off with lots of caveats.
So I'm going to just say one last fairly spurious thing, just because your phrase "of equal weight" reminded me of something that really confused me. Why on earth did they make Michael Gove so fat and Boris so thin? They were of equal weight. It was like, no, that's not, they look like Stan and Ollie in real life.
That's true. Well, you know, that's the mysteries of casting. Who knows? Maybe they had a Boris wig and that was the only actor who it fitted.
Okay, well, we haven't done a clip on this occasion because it's so fresh. But I will play out with the trailer so that people can hear that. And it's definitely worth watching. For me, it was caveated in as much as anything in my own emotions around the ongoing situation of Brexit. You know, on the day that it came out, we had the insane spectacle of 87 lorries in Kent pretending to be a 4,000 lorry trailback to practice for no deal. This is why I feel that doing this drama now misses a lot of the drama to come. Maybe there'll be a sequel. People's vote.
Don't bet on it.
It comes with all the glory of a James Graham written play. The guy can write, you know? The guy can write the hell out of a thing. Whether he wrote the hell out of the right thing at the right time, that's where my caveats lie.
Well, you've got to write something at some time, and I think this was as good a time as any. And there'll be a lot, you know, other people can write other things. You can have your conspiracy drama that emphasises, you know, the dark face behind the scenes, Russians and Americans and all of that. And that will be, you know, a very interesting thing to do. But I think it tells a part of the story. It may, you know, bled into, you know, giving a certain figure a greater platform that maybe, you know, he deserves, given that all he was doing, his genius, such as it was to play back the prejudices of a certain group of people, and in a certain way that mobilised them to come out to vote, and, you know, to exploit their unfortunate circumstances in order to win this ridiculous campaign, which the drama itself, you know, various points, characters, and Cummings himself says this is not a way to do anything, but this is where we are, and it also kind of towards the end it becomes clearer that it's about us, you know, it's about the people of Britain, and this is how we responded to that campaign. Maybe we were manipulated, maybe some of us were manipulated, and, you know, that's to be decided. And obviously some of us were manipulated, because that was the whole point of the Cummings kind of technique. But, you know, we were manipulated. We allowed ourselves to be manipulated. And I think it says as much about, if you watch it in a certain way, it says as much about us and what a bunch of idiots we are, as it does about the evil people behind the scenes who manipulated us.
Well, there you go. So it just behoves me to say thank you to Steve. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Emma.
And finally say thank you to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield for our theme tune. And this has been a Political Human production.
Everyone knows who won, but not everyone knows how.
We're about to ask the biggest question a nation has asked itself in a generation. In or out? Things are going to get pretty nasty.
I will get us across the line whatever way I can.
Dominic Cummings is an egotist with a wrecking ball.
We have to hack the system.
Hack it. You turn up for 5 minutes and you think you know the law.
This is just a game to them, but the risk to you.
There's no risk. There's nothing to lose.
3 million extra voters that the other side have no idea exist.
You are kidding me.
This should be an amicable contest.
War. Total war.
They can say anything they want with zero consequences.
Trumpets, please. Let's take back control.
There is a new politics in town that you cannot control.
Benedict Cumberbatch in a new feature-length drama, Brexit, the Uncivil War. Monday, the 7th of January on Channel 4.